A playlist original.
All right. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Back to the Blockbuster with your hosts, Gaius and Jackson. We've got another week's worth of news to run by you guys, and it is April 1st as of recording this episode, April Fool's Day. I don't know about you guys, but looks between Gaius and I think we both got fooled by a couple news items that were announced on April the 1st. Definitely one in particular that definitely got me. I took it to heart. I woke up today not even really keeping in mind that, you know, the internet was going to be full of jokes and you know, false information. So there's a couple of headlines grabbed my attention, and it took me a minute to realize they were not real. So were there any ones that got you, Gaius?
There were a few. It was funny too. Like, I logged in just to like check out our like movie web portal, because we basically for the website, like, there's like all these stories that are loaded up for us to like just grab. Like, they were like, there's certain stories that are like assigned to us, and there's other ones that are like, hey, whoever wants to take it, you can just grab it and write. And then I logged in and I was like looking at some of them, and I was like, I don't know if these are real or not. And I don't feel good. I don't feel good about writing today. And actually like sent a message to like the editor in chief. I was like, hey, I'm just not going to cover anything today, because I feel like I
don't know what's real, what's not. Legit.
Yeah. Like, I wouldn't want to like sell us on a story and like try to source it, and they're like, yo, you got fooled, man. So I don't,
that would be super embarrassing.
I am not a fan of April Fool's Day. April Fool's Day is not
kind of mean-spirited this year. I mean I'm fine with practical jokes, you know, in person and stuff, but like there was some stuff, like for instance, like the one that got me, there's a great Instagram account I follow. I'll shout them out even though they did me dirty. The Synagogue, but spelled like C-I-N-E, like for cinema. Anyway, great follow if you guys are into movie stuff. But they posted Mindhunter season 3 being approved, and I jumped for joy. And it took like 0.8 seconds, and my brain instantly knew that's not real. But I felt that euphoria for a moment, and I was like, God damn it. I actually commented like, fuck you guys for saying that. It got me big time. Yeah. And then I scrolled by something too. This one actually was pretty like obvious, but I did see something saying that like Denis Villeneuve and Chris Nolan were teaming up to direct a movie. I don't know if you saw that one.
I did see that too. And I was like, is that real?
I was believing it until like halfway down, and then it said like the premise of what this fake movie was going to be. I was like, oh, that's actually the joke that opened my eyes to it being April Fool's Day. So definitely got fooled a couple times, but the stuff we got for you guys today is all legit as far as we can tell.
Someone said, one of my friends sent me a story about Spider-Man 4 and Tobey Maguire and Sam Raimi, and they were like, hey, is this real? Are they really trying to do one? And I was like, I don't know. And then I go to look it up. And I was like, I can't tell if this is like an April Fool's joke or not, but a lot of people posted it on like their site. So I was like, I guess they've talked about it at least.
I had heard talks about that earlier in March. So I think that's actually legit. At least I don't know where they're at, but I think there's something there though. So that could be actually legit.
Yeah. By the way, this was cool. Not on our docket to talk about, but do you want a Spider-Man 4 with Tobey Maguire? Like, would you be like, and Sam Raimi doing it again? Like, do you really like, because the last one is like not good. Like Spider-Man 3 is not.
No, good. It's not. I don't know. I not really, honestly. I mean, if I see enough on paper that it piques my interest, like I would probably watch it, but not really jumping for it or clawing for that right now. But I think Sam Raimi could do other stuff.
Also, hot take, I would prefer if Andrew Garfield came back before Tobey Maguire.
Really?
I think he is a better Spider-Man than Tobey Maguire. Actually, if I had to rank my Spider-Man, it's Tom Holland, Andrew Garfield, Tobey Maguire.
Really? Okay. Yeah. I think Tobey Maguire is a fantastic Peter Parker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Two different characters. Yeah. I haven't really thought about that in a long time. I haven't even seen both of Andrew Garfield's movies. I haven't seen the second one, and I haven't seen Spider-Man 3 in forever. So. Yeah, interesting conversation.
When we saw No Way Home, like I think everyone in the theater claps a lot louder for Andrew Garfield. I was like, wow, where were you guys 10 years ago?
Good point, actually, because this movie's kind of got ignored.
But yes, we do have a lot of fun stories on the docket today. Well, not all of them are fun. One of them is kind of sad. Very sad. But some interesting stuff for us to go over, and what we are confirming that all these are real. None of these are fake April Fool's jokes. No, Jackson did his due diligence.
Yeah, very, very surface level investigation behind most of these, but you know, confirmed from legit sources. So, starting off on a happy note, speaking of jokes, for those of you looking for a good comedy to watch, according to experts, and that's used very vaguely, I don't know which experts, but a panel of experts deemed Superbad as the funniest movie ever. So, if you guys are looking for a laugh, check out Superbad if you haven't seen it in a while. That was actually the last movie I watched in 2023. I watched it on New Year's Day, and I can confirm 17 years later, movie still holds up. It's one of my favorites for sure. And you guys know, those that have been fans of the show for a while, very critical of comedies, and that is a tried and true one for me. And Gaius, you're a fan of it as well. When is the last time you saw Superbad?
It's been like 5 years, I think. I remember seeing it in theaters. I actually saw it the first time on opening night in theaters. And that was a really fun experience. And like we talked about before, like I think you and I are like the same when it comes to comedies. Like it's our least favorite genre to watch. And
By a wide margin.
It's because like when comedies are not good, like they're really not good.
Yeah.
And it's like almost uncomfortable when they're not funny. But when they are really good, like they are golden. And like Superbad is a really funny movie. And then you sent me this over the weekend, and I asked you, like, do you think it is the funniest movie ever?
Yeah, like, I hadn't really pondered that question myself. This would be on my list. It would probably be in my top five. Like, there's definitely some staples that come to mind. Like, I'm a big fan of, even though it's a remake, pretty much, of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, 2010's Due Date with Robert De Niro and Zach Galifianakis consistently ranks up there for me. Big fan of The Hangover. But Superbad would definitely be up there. I don't know if I've ever really stacked up and like, tried to think the other guys.
Are you like Wedding Crashers? Do you like that?
I don't not like it. I just haven't really seen it since I was really, really young. So I can't really.
So yeah, I think though, like the Vince Vaughn, like Owen Wilson, like that period is like a generational thing. So like, I love old school.
Dodgeball I'm big on.
And I love Dodgeball too. Yeah. And Anchorman. I think Anchorman's really funny, but it is, there was like, it seems like all these like kind of comedians had their moment for a little bit, depending on like what generation you grew up with them. Like I feel like we had like the Will Ferrell, Vince Vaughn, and then we got the Judd Apatow, like all those people, like Knocked Up, Seth Rogen, and we got that kind of crew after that. But yeah, like I said, when the movie is really funny, it's really good. Like I love Neighbors. I think Neighbors is hilarious.
I rewatched Neighbors recently too, and I hated that when I saw it in theaters.
Oh, really?
My viewing experience is a little bit tainted. I saw it with my girlfriend at the time and my parents, who that sort of humor is not for my mom. And I was sitting next to her in the theater, and like I was like wanted to die at some of those jokes. Watching it now, like 10 or whatever years later, I had a friggin' blast. That movie was hilarious.
Zach, by the way, we were talking about over the weekend with our friends, like if there was an embarrassing movie that you've ever seen with your parents, like you were like, oh, that was so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've ever seen this movie, but I saw Unfaithful with my mother. And it's like Diane Lane and Richard Gere. All you definitely need to know about it is there's wall-to-wall sex in the movie, like a lot.
Oh, God.
Remember sitting there next to her, just look straight ahead. Don't even look her way. Like, pretend like you don't care about what's on the screen.
Yeah. And,
Like I couldn't appreciate that movie until years later because I was like, I can't enjoy this.
Sounds like you had the same experience I did with Neighbors.
Yeah.
I did see Gone Girl in theaters with my mom, and while that movie's phenomenal and we both enjoyed it, there were some moments in that movie, because that came out when I was 16 and we went to go see it together, and there were some moments in that movie too that were very uncomfortable to be watching in the theater with your mother. Some graphic sex scenes in that movie too. You know the one I'm talking about. Very, very weird.
Makes you just shrink down in your chair, like
and disappear. Yeah.
And exactly. Disappear. Like, yeah.
Yeah. What a great future question though.
Yeah. And like I actually asked my friends when you sent me this about Superbad. I asked them, and most of my friends actually said that they couldn't think of another comedy that they've liked the way they've liked Superbad.
That's how I feel too. Like, I don't disagree with that at all. I think it's a pretty solid pick.
Yeah. And also, fun fact, I never get to tell this story, but the guy who plays McLovin, I always forget his real name, and I feel really bad because
Christopher Mintz-Plasse. Yeah.
Because in real life, I didn't remember his real name either, but he knew a girl. There's a bar in Hermosa Beach called Patrick Malloy's, and he knew a girl that worked there, and he came to visit her. And we were all hanging out with her after she got off work. And she just kind of casually like, oh, like my friend's coming. He's in movies, but she wouldn't say who he was. And then he shows up and I was like, and we're all drunk at this point. I'm like,
McLovin's here.
Yeah, of course.
He must get that so much.
Yeah. And I felt really bad because I couldn't remember his actual name. Felt really bad, but he was really cool. He actually invited us to a party at Dave Franco threw the party. And we all got to go. They did take our phones because we weren't allowed to like take pictures or do anything like that. They're like,
okay,
you know, that's part of the course when it comes to like people in that industry. Sometimes
that is super dope,
but really random night. We played beer pong with them. It was great. That's how I never get to tell that
crazy story. That is awesome.
Yeah. Oh my god. It was like a lot of fun. It was just so random. And I just thought it was so funny that she was just casually like, yeah, he's in some stuff. And I was like, well, who is it? And he walks in. I was like, you could
what the fuck? Yeah.
You could have led with McLovin. I don't know.
100%. Gonna give you some time to look up his real name too.
But then I'm like whispering to my friends, like, I feel so bad I don't remember his real name. I can't just call him McLovin all night. Like that's not good.
Did you not IMDb him right away?
No. I mean, no. there's a lot of beer and tequila, man. It was fair like there's a enough. Lot. I think I was also surprised that it was him.
I was caught off guard, no doubt.
And he was like so down to earth and so chill and so nice. And the fact that he invited us to that party because like he didn't know us at all. He only knew her.
Right.
And he's like, yeah, do you want to come? And then it was funny how he brought up who Dave Franco was. He's like, do you know who Dave Franko is? And I'm just kind of like, not like, I was like, do you know who Dave Franko is? Yeah. That's how I was like thinking in my brain. I was like, yeah, I've heard of him. That's how I kind of like did it in my brain. But like, yeah, it was a weird, fun night. It was like so random. But like, we don't get a lot of like celebrity stuff in Hermosa Beach. Like that happened one time. Miles Teller came to one of our bars before in Hermosa Beach. And I think you can easily blend in there. It's not like going out in LA, like Hollywood. Right. Like they can actually easily hang out there and people care about them being there. They care, like they're like, oh, like that's cool that they're here, but like they don't bother them.
Swarm them. Yeah.
Wait, whereas like if you go to somewhere in Hollywood, it's just like as soon as they spot someone like that, they're like, you know, everyone's phones out and like, yeah. So like they feel like the South Bay is like a nice safe place to come
in. Like a recluse, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
A safe haven, if you will. Oh, yeah. That's great.
But yeah, but I feel like I'm due for a rewatch of Superbad.
Yeah, 5 years, absolutely.
Yeah, 5 years is a long time.
Every couple of years at least watch for me, and it's guaranteed laughs if you throw it on with a crowd of guys or something.
Yeah, and I love how deadpan Michael Cera is in that movie. when him and Jonah Hero are having that discussion, so where he's just like, sometimes I draw pictures of dicks. He's like, what, like a man dick?
All-time lines in that movie.
There's some really great lines.
Some very crude humor that doesn't, you know, hold up by today's standards, but very, very still funny if you can like have fun with it.
And future Oscar winner Emma Stone in that movie too, which is crazy. That's right.
One of her like debut movies. Right before Zombieland.
I think she did that and then Easy A. I think that was like right after that. But yeah, she like really took off. It's crazy that her career is she's done like a lot of different things. Good for her.
Mm-hmm. A lot of stars in the making in that movie too.
But we might ask you guys if you guys think it's the funniest movie ever. Though I think I might put a poll. Let's see what you guys say. I know everyone has like their signature comedies that they love, but this one gets named a lot by a lot of people. Yeah. I know they love Superbad.
Rightfully so. It's a fantastic movie. On the sadder side of the news, fans of the Boys spinoff show Gen V were sad to hear this week that one of the stars of that show, Chance Perdomo, if I'm saying his name right, I hope he latest member, unfortunately, of the 27 Club, as I believe it was a motorcycle accident.
No accident. Took
his life on March the 30th, I believe it was. And he was great. I don't know if you got the chance to see Gen V, but he was great in that show. Did you see?
I actually finally watched it because my brother, because I love the Boys, and it took me a while to watch the spinoff.
Me too, actually.
My brother was like, you have to watch it. It's so good. And I finally did. And I mean, it's always sad to hear about someone that young passing away like that. And it was one of those things. I got an email from work. That's like, they try to like, basically on the website, they're like, hey, like, we know that no one really wants to write stories that are basically like obituaries, but like, is there anyone available to write this? And it popped up on my phone and they're like, it was just so shocking to read it. And like, yeah, you know, that. And then I go on Instagram and like a lot of people who were on that show with him or who worked with him at all, because I guess he was on that Sabrina show as well.
Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, 36 episodes across three seasons. Yeah.
Yeah, so many people were just saying just a lot of nice stuff about him. And like, I don't know, it's tragic, young, you know, it's unfortunate.
Absolutely. I think he had a bright star ahead of him and no doubt would have been wrapped into the Boys universe. I'm sure there are plans for him to be in the next. I think they're tying in the cast from the spinoff and in the next season of the show, which is coming out later this year. So definitely was looking forward to seeing where his career went. Very, very tragic and sudden. He was only a couple of years older than me, so it's strange to look at it that way.
That's crazy. But yeah, very sad. But at least I guess like we always talk about this too when people pass away. I mean, he didn't get to do a lot, of course, because he was young. But I think he at least was attached to like really good projects. A lot of people liked that. The Jim V show, and they liked Sabrina. So at least he was attached to things that like people can look back on and really appreciate.
That's the thing about being an actor or a filmmaker in any way, an aspect, you're immortalized in your work, right? So you'll always be there 100 years from now, you know, God willing, if we're still here, we'll have that content to see. And for those fans of Gen V, at least he played Andre Anderson in the show. Yeah. And then his character in The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina was Ambrose Spellman. I haven't watched the show, so I don't know what his character is all about, but he was definitely a lead in Gen V and was looking forward to
He was. So it'll be interesting what they're going to do now. I mean,
definitely.
And I'm sure it's like the last thing on their mind right now, trying to figure out what they're going to do now.
Story wise.
Story wise, but like that is something that they'll have to figure. I mean, it's always crazy when you're like working on something. And you know, we dealt with that with like Paul Walker when he passed away, and like you know, sometimes you have actors like that where they pass away in the middle of filming something. It's like, okay, what do we do now? We talked about that with Brandon Lee too. And then you have it in a situation with like Heath Ledger. He already finished The Dark Knight, but it's like,
I was just thinking of him.
How do we respectfully release this and not like you know feel like we're not taking
capitalizing advantage, like, on his death?
So it has to be a hard thing when you're working on something and having to release it after that. I know with Paul Walker, like one of the reasons that they really worked hard to finish Furious 7 was because his mom and his dad and his brothers were like, he would want you guys to finish it. And that's why his brothers stepped in and, you know, they stood in for him in that movie and it helped out. Yeah. So like the family kind of pushed that along too. So But it has to, because that is a conversation that eventually has to happen. Like, well, what are we going to do now that, it's unfortunate. Yes,
gone too soon. Rest in peace, Chance Perdomo. Again, I hope I'm saying his last name right, but very, very tragic.
Yeah.
Yes. But yes, moving on. Some more like dismal news, I guess. I don't know what you're, we haven't really had the chance to talk about this next piece together, but I'm interested in your thoughts. So, Alex Garland, whose next movie comes out, I believe it's coming out April 12th, Civil War, which is one of my most anticipated movies of the year. He announced, Cena Sue cannot wait, but he announced, I don't know to what outlet or who quoted this, but apparently he's not planning on directing anything for the foreseeable future, as that the quote went. So kind of like entering pseudo directing retirement. He's only got a few movies to his name and they're all fantastic. I know one of his movies, Ex Machina, was, on the poll for you guys to vote on for one of our April anniversaries. Didn't win, spoiler alert. Still a great movie from him. He's done Men. I don't know if you had a chance to see that. Annihilation. Probably his best movie, if you ask me. I love that movie.
Yeah, I love that
movie. Civil War, I cannot wait for. So disappointed by that news, but what were your thoughts when you heard that?
Well, do you think like the subject matter might have just taken a lot out of him? Like the last, I mean, like it feels like it's very heavy. I mean, even though it's a very like fantasy driven movie, like this would not actually happen in real life, right? But I mean, I think I told you when I posted that trailer on our TikTok, like so many people had a lot of thoughts about the just the overall like theme and like of the movie, and I just wonder if like maybe the subject matter may have taken a lot out of him. Is, I mean, it seems like something that he might change his mind on later.
Yeah, I mean, we've heard directors say that before and actors, but
or maybe he's not feeling inspired much
That's a good point too. That would be hard to. That's a great point. I honestly, I haven't even really racked my brain as to like what I think the reason might be, or if there was something that he cited as the reason. But you know what? That would, as a filmmaker and artist, it would be tough to enter new projects if you didn't really feel a connection to making them. If you didn't feel inspired, like you said, that could definitely be hard to play.
We do know that he at least is still working as a writer, because he's going to be writing the
28 days,
with Danny Boyle. So at least he's still writing movies,
right?
But yeah, I mean, I would hate to lose like a filmmaker's voice like that, because he's very, very talented. And like even something like Men, I know Men was very polarizing. A lot of people didn't love it, but I don't think he's made a bad movie yet. So like
neither do I. But that's a good point. Actually, he kind of just renewed my hope, because he has more writing credits than he has directing credits. He's got 6 movies he's directed and 19 that he's written or helped write. I always forget he wrote 2012's Dread with Carl Urban. That's awesome that he did that.
A lot of people love that movie. Like,
that movie is fucking badass.
Underrated, yeah.
Yeah, he wrote Sunshine, another Danny Boyle movie.
Also very underrated.
Yeah, and then all the movies that he's directed, he's written as well. Fantastic, fantastic screenwriter. So hopefully we get some more Alex Garland work. Maybe if he's just not directing, that's okay. I mean, you know, he's still a young guy. He's only, let me see here. I say that not knowing how old he is. I'm just looking at him. I don't see his birthday here, though. But, oh, yes, I do. 1970. Okay, so, all right. Wow, he does not look like he's 54.
He doesn't look it, though. Yeah, yeah.
Holy smokes. He looks like he's in his late 30s.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, I kind of wonder if the subject matter of the latest movie, if you just need to take like a breather.
It's a heavy movie, no doubt. It's a heavy movie, considering the climate around it right now.
Also, A24 is the most expensive movie they made, and I'm wondering it's tracking to tracking at like $25 million right now, which is not bad for like an A24 smaller. It's weird to say it's small, because I think they're trying to A24 has been trying to like break out and make bigger movies, but they also want to maintain their indie cred too. So I think it's kind of hard for them to like, they're trying to figure out how can they make more money by making bigger movies, but also still make the stuff that we all know and love. Cause we love them as like an independent movie studio, and we like them because they're not Warner Brothers or Paramount or Sony.
And this is,
But they also have to make money. So there's that. But yeah, but this is their most expensive endeavor. And I kind of think the early word from the movie is pretty positive. So I think at least it has that working in their favor.
It's rocking a 79 Metascore right now with 25 critic reviews. It's got pretty good reviews on IMDb too. It's sitting at a 7.2. So pretty, even though, you know, there's higher rated movies out there, but that's very, very great. And I love when you see a similarity between critics and users on this app. Kind of shows that everyone's on the same page. So pretty good reviews overall. $50 million budget. We do not get a lot of movies in that budget range these days. So
no, also not anymore.
Big pump for that. I think this, like you said, Civil War, now A24 is the most expensive production. I think it dethroned Bo Was Afraid from last year, which I think they threw $30 million at for Ari Aster. That lost them a lot of money. So,
I wonder if this movie has any international appeal, because this feels like a very much like an American,
movie.
True. So I wonder, because we always talk about with box office, a lot like international grosses save a lot of those movies, because it kind of cuts off some of the bleeding as far as if their budgets are too big, they can make up for it, overseas. And I just wonder if this movie has that appeal, because it feels like it's very much an American driven
movie. It does, but American politics are still very popular around the globe, because the implications from them impact a lot of countries. And I would imagine, the average person in whatever country, it would at least have some semblance of what's going on, and can at least tell a little bit about the culture in the States right now. And I feel like it's coming out at a weird time. I know we've talked about this on earlier news episodes about the climate in the States right now, and what this movie is depicting, and how it could be looked at as almost irresponsible. Like it could be fanning a flame that's kind of already there right now. Yeah. And so I feel like, I'm not an American. I mean, I obviously live, I'm like the next thing being a Canadian, but that I'm still somebody that's not an American, very much interested in this movie and is at least somewhat aware of what's going on. So I feel like that wouldn't be too far away from the experience of, say, someone from the UK or from where else, so I think there's potential.
I was wondering about that, with you, because I've never talked to anyone who, I mean, I've talked to people who are from Canada. I've talked to you everywhere. do you guys pay attention to American politics? I follow it that as,
I don't know about Canadians en masse, but we do very much most of our news, maybe not so much local news, but our national news and everything is very much very ties into American news. I mean, I love politics in general. I took political science at university and I still follow these things on a daily basis anyway, just because it's my interest. So I'm probably maybe a little bit more up to date than your average person that doesn't really care. But I think in Canada, there are so many things and news that comes out of the States that you just can't help but absorb, even if you're not trying to. So I think the average person in Canada would at least be aware of lots of stuff that happens in the States. Yeah. So you kind of can't avoid it. Canada's not exciting enough on its own. And a lot of our problems or things that happen here are usually in a direct response or at least tie into things that are happening in the States. And they just kind of come upwind to Canada. So they do feel very connected in a lot of ways. So I bet you, people might not even know how much they do know about just news from the United States. I bet you they'd surprise themselves. But you don't have to look. In summary, you don't have to look hard to find what you want about the United States or to tune into their news. So I bet it's not that far off. Thanks. But regardless, all that to say, I'm super excited for Civil War. Like I said, it's one of my most anticipated of the year. Trailer looks awesome.
We were talking about this offline. We are starving for good movies right now. I haven't seen anything good since Dune. I know Dune came out fairly recently, but it was it's been a hellscape other than Dune. So I saw how much Ghostbusters Frozen Empire fell this weekend. It didn't hold up well at all after its opening weekend. My brother actually saw that movie on his own and I was how was it? And he was it was awful.
Who would have guessed?
Both of you and I were starving for something good to watch, and finally I think it gets better April through the rest of the year, but January, February, March other than Dune was rough,
tough. I haven't been to the theaters since I saw Dune twice in March, but it's coming up on a month, and usually I average a couple theatrical experiences a month. So Civil War will probably be the next thing I go see. If I can't go see Immaculate sometime this week, I'm going to try and get there. But I know you saw it. You had good things to say about it too.
Yeah, it was really, I was surprised by how good it was. And I actually found out, I guess Sydney Sweeney had come across that script 10 years ago. So she was 16 or something when she saw it. And when she read it and she was it stayed with her. And once she got more clout as an actress and now a producer, because she produced this movie too.
Yeah.
And once she was able to find it again, she found the script again. The guy who directed it, I guess he's directed her in two other movies that she's been in. She was responsible with hiring him. She pretty much got most of the funding for the movie too. So I thought that was a cool story about how she threw that together. I think it was interesting what she said too. She talked honestly about Madam Web, right? And she was just hey, they're how do you feel about being a part of that? And she could easily distance herself from it. And what she said was I wouldn't have a relationship with Sony if I didn't do that movie. So I did Madam Web, and then I was able to do Anyone But You, and that made a lot of money. So she is very strategic about what she's doing, which I think is pretty smart. It's so crazy how all these young people are really power players in the industry now. We talk about her, Timothée Chalamet, all these people were doing big things. They're not even fucking 30 yet.
It's crazy. This is our next generation we have to look forward to in cinema. So at least they're making these moves now, and no doubt they're guided by their mentors really and whatnot in the industry, Yeah, the rest of everything that we got before we get to box office is all sequel news. I'll let you lead off with the first thing we got. This is a sequel to two in development and some casting news too. But lead us off with the first
thing
here.
This is for all the ladies out there who are looking forward to a Freaky Friday sequel. Jamie Lee Curtis. You know what? And I to her credit, I think she manifested this because she talked about wanting to make a sequel to Freaky Friday. She put it on Instagram. She said, I would love to, like, she like posted a picture with Lindsay Lohan because they had like hung out. And okay. It was like one of those things that like, let's do this again. And it kind of started from there. And then Disney was like, all right, I think we can figure out something. And then like the whole strike thing happened. So they stopped talking about it. But it actually has a director now, and they are definitely doing it. And it looks like they're going to start filming. They said probably this summer.
Jeez.
And and then the person who's directing it is Nisha Ganatra. She actually directed the limited series Welcome to Chippendales for Hulu. And I don't know much about the plot. I don't know how much. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be, of course, some Freaky Friday body swapping again. But that's all we know.
Kind of has to, right?
And I will say this: I actually saw the first movie in theaters. It came out in 2003, and I did not want to see it. I was like very much against wanting to see it, and then I felt so stupid when I was like watching it and enjoying every second of it. I think you kind of realize that like Lindsay Lohan was like really good. Like she was like a star. Like you kind of saw that. And you know, she did that a year before she did Mean Girls. Same director actually too. He directed Freaky Friday and Mean Girls.
I was wondering where I recognized Mark Waters from.
Yeah. And then it made a lot of money too. I mean, it was a fun movie. And Jamie Lee Curtis got actually nominated for a Golden Globe for that movie too. Like,
wow.
Now there's going to be a pocket on the audience that's like, do we really need this? But the original Freaky Friday made $160.8 million on a $20 million budget.
So it takes a
that's
long.
Why. Yeah. So that's exactly. So that's why we're getting it, even though it seems like it was a long time coming. Have you seen it?
Several times when I was. This was very popular when I was a youngin, but it's been a long time. Like I don't know that I've actually like sat through as a like post adolescence and watch this all the way through. I would have been like a preteen when I'd last seen this, like on like Disney Channel. So I mean, yes and no, it's one of those hybrid answers, but I would like, you know, never be opposed to checking it out sometime for fun. It wouldn't be something I would like go out of my way to watch, but like I have like good, like,
I mean, I own it. It's like in my rack somewhere.
Wow.
And it's funny too because like the girls in our group, they still bump that Ultimate song by Lindsay Lohan that's in the movie. They like will play that when we're going to parties.
I'm just like
please can we roll the windows up and not let anyone know that we're listening to the Freaky Friday song. it's interesting that movie is staying with a lot of people, and I think it'll do well just because I think Lindsay Lohan actually, and good for her, like she really turned her life around in the big way. Like she, you know,
right?
She went through a lot post Mean Girls, and now she has like a huge like Netflix deal. She's been doing Netflix movies for them, and this is another big step for her to like doing a sequel to like one of her big movies. So, and she's married now. She has a kid. Like it's really like she's turned her life around in like a huge way. So.
Good for
I'm excited for it, at least on that level. Like, do we need Freaky Friday 2? No, but whatever.
I'm with you. Something that maybe makes a little bit more sense, another sequel we're getting is to Ready or Not, which I think came out. When did Ready or Not come out? That's from the
2019.
A little bit makes good, a little bit movie. More sense. 5 years old already, though. Geez, I saw this a couple years ago for the first time, and I had fun with it. I didn't like love it, but I thought it was good.
I love that movie.
I'll check it out again.
I think I just loved it because I thought the idea was so original, and like, you know, it at least wasn't like cookie cutter by the numbers kind of horror movie. It was like a really cool original idea
for sure.
And it made me fall in love with Samara Weaving, who is basically Margot Robbie's twin.
A modern day scream queen in her own right.
I actually really loved the first movie, but I actually wasn't too excited to hear that they're making a sequel to this, because I don't think the original movie needs one.
I think a prequel would make sense for this. A sequel,
I think it's a cool one-off idea that
yeah
works as a cool original movie. I don't really think like we need another one. But
the concept and of the Radio Silence guys are not doing it. They're not directing it.
The guy.
Oh no, eh?
I know. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, the guy who's directing he directed Escape Room, which it's a movie. And I don't know if you've ever seen it. But it's not great.
Unfortunately, I don't know where I saw it, but I did. What are they doing? They're not doing the next screen. They're not doing this sequel. Like, what are those guys doing?
I know, and they already filmed Abigail, so they already that's coming out in April for them. So I don't know what they're doing.
Oh, that's right. Okay. They have that. They already finished that.
Yeah. So like, I was surprised that they're not involved in it. But
one of I'm looking at so it's Tyler Gillette and Matt Bettinelli Olpin. Yeah. They're the two halves of the Radio Silence directing duo. It's just two of them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm on Matt Bettinelli Olpin's IMDb page, and his only upcoming directorial credit is Abigail, which is coming out here soon. So it doesn't look like they're up to much. Interesting.
How do you feel about that? We haven't really talked about it. I know there's like a trailer that's been out for it, and we didn't really cover the trailer on the show, but like, how do you feel about that?
I'm not against it by any means. I think it would be something I would at least give the time of day to go see. It seems like a neat spin on like the horror comedy, but leaning more towards horror. Cool little plot about a heist turned horror. I think that's kind of neat. We'll see how it actually pans out. I think it definitely has the potential to not be fantastic, but I enjoyed the trailer for all intents and purposes.
Yeah. I thought the trailer was really good. I thought the trailer was really good too. I mean, I think it's an interesting idea, and I actually like them as directors. Like, I think they're like, I actually liked them way before they did Scream. Like, they did that segment for like that VHS horror movie.
Which one?
And like, they did the one with the girl with like the split. I always forget like which one it is.
Oh, she's like a vampire thing. Oh,
yeah. They did that one. Yeah, they did that one. And like, so I actually liked them a lot, and like, I think they have really like a great creative mind. I think they're really good. And you know, I actually read an article. They did a cover story for the Hollywood Reporter about Melissa Barrera, but they talked a lot about those guys too. And it was a lot to do with like the whole thing that happened with Scream, and like, you know, they were excited to do Scream 7. They were like, what they thought was going to happen was they could do Scream and Scream 6, and they were going to go do Abigail and like have a break. And Spyglass was like, no. Like, we were on Scream 7, like, now. And that's why they didn't, and that's why they weren't involved in it. And they said they hate that they weren't, like, they had a trilogy idea planned for, like, Sam Carpenter, Tara, like, you know, Jenna Ortega's character and Melissa Barrera's character. They had a whole idea for three movies, and they said it sucks that, you know, they're not going to be able to do that now because, you know, obviously she's not involved anymore and they're not involved anymore. But they love her,
fuck up on by the way. Behalf. She's in Abigail. Yeah,
they actually really love her a lot. They're really close to her, and they supported her through the whole, you know, firing thing with Scream. They, you know, I actually, it was a really good article just about, you know, her kind of standing her ground, and like, they, you know, and there was a lot of misinformation too. Like, her publicist, they actually said when that story came out that her publicist let her go. That wasn't the thing either. Her publicist actually like stood by her entirely during the whole thing. And a lot of, they actually talked to, they said insiders that worked at Spyglass that want to be anonymous, and they, whoever these anonymous people were, they were like, we think that they jumped the gun with firing her. They could have like waited that out, and whatever they thought was inappropriate about her posting would have been forgotten about in like a couple weeks. So they really were like, they really jumped the gun getting rid of her.
Very much so. Yeah. Like I said, they really messed up in that endeavor. I mean, at least we're getting it, Scream 7, which is cool. I mean, I love that Kevin Williamson's directing it. At least I think that's the next best option, if not that, even better, honestly. Somebody that's very familiar and intimately familiar with Scream, really the guy that
it's his brainchild.
Yeah, exactly. So great person to have in the directing chair, and some great news for people that are anticipating.
And a good segue for our next story.
Yeah, exactly. no surprise now, Neve Campbell's been attached to it for a few weeks now, and there were some rumors that a couple other legacy cast members from the Scream series were in talks to join, and we finally got a little glimpse at who one of those may be. Surprise, surprise, Courtney Cox is in talks to come back for Scream 7. I honestly thought that was a given, so I'm not surprised to hear
that. I thought so too. I mean, she had an executive producer credit on the last one, so I thought that was a no-brainer for her coming back. You know what's interesting, though? You know how Neve Campbell got a lot of shit for coming back because they were like, oh, it feels like you're not standing in solidarity with Melissa Barrera getting fired. That has not happened to Courtney Cox. Like, her being in talks to come back has not caused, like, an internet uproar. Like, why are you coming back then? Like, I don't know why. And I'm glad it hasn't, but I'm just really, I thought, right. But I think it was interesting that, like, they did that to Neve Campbell a little bit, but not her.
And I don't know, that was never Neve a Campbell's strong like argument. Lead. I get, that's like kind of where my brain goes. People are associating them as being the leads of the franchise now, so maybe that they're kind of artificially connecting them, but there was literally nothing that suggests that, like, Neve Campbell or Courtney Cox should base that decision of Melissa Barrera being fired have anything to do with them returning. Like, they're their own people who have been in the series for several movies before.
I mean, they start in 1996. So, like, I mean, they've been a part of it forever. I mean, and Courtney Cox, the only cast member who's been in all of them. She's been in, if these talks, like, officially go through, she will be in all seven of the movies. I say this now, one of them has to die. And I don't really want it to be Sydney, because I can't. I don't want that.
Do you really think they're going to?
But one of them has to die, dude. Like, remember when they did Scream 2022? I was like, all right, you're bringing all the legacy characters back. Don't kill the girls. You can get rid of Dewey, and like, that's fine. And I didn't love that Dewey died, but like, someone had to go of the original people
for sure.
Like, to kind of like raise the stakes and be like, hey, this is like no one is safe kind of thing.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this before. Like, I love Scream. I love Neve Campbell. I love all like the Scream movies are like comfort food for me. And I love watching them and I love everyone in it, but it gets really ridiculous after a certain point where like they keep coming back and coming back and like something's got to happen to one of them and it can't be Sydney. So it has to be Gale.
The fact that Gale even survived the last movie is kind of a point of contention for me, because they very much kind of
made it seem like she was
gone. Then all of a sudden she's, you know, still hanging on. So I have a feeling she'll probably pull like a Laurie from Halloween Kills kind of role, where she'll be bedridden in the hospital. But I mean, who knows? I agree, though. So one of them's got to go.
Someone said,
let's have Ghostface win.
Someone said it'd be really cool if they like, if she was in the opening scene, if she was like the opening scene kill, that would like either really piss a lot of people off or it'd be really cool. But yeah, because like if you're gonna see that movie like on opening night and then like that opening scene she's in it, you're like, oh yep, she's about to die. Yeah,
that would be pretty ballsy of Kevin Williamson to do that.
But
I think it has to be.
I also think he. I think he loves those characters so much that he's afraid to kill them off. I think that's the problem. But like, you, in order for it to like surprise us and raise the stakes, they do have to get rid of one of them. And I, at this point, now we don't have Dewey, so it has to be Gale. I don't want it to be Sydney, so it has to be Gale. Unless they bring back Hayden Panettiere again, maybe they can kill her off, I guess. But
I bet you she'll come back too. I don't see why not. Yeah.
So like, but you know. And I mean, how do you feel about like getting rid of like one of the OGs? Like, do you think like it has to happen?
I mean, yeah, I think the best chance to do it was in the last movie, and it's kind of annoying that it didn't happen. So it kind of seems like low hanging fruit for this one. But the Scream series at the point it is right now, I think, just and by no fault of the series itself, but because of how Spyglass handled it and where this series finds itself now with the firing of who were our two new leads of the series. The Scream movies are kind of running out of steam, and I think they need to definitely, like, you know, follow through on a punch here and have something big and probably just wrap it up after this movie. So I think it's got, you know, big shoes to fill and it's got to really land. So I'm interested to see what happens and can't wait for them to start filming. So,
but you're right. To be fair, no one important died in the last one. Like, no one, like, no one of significance died. They got rid of, like,
pretty safe movie.
They got rid of one of the girls that got introduced in that movie, and like, everyone, like, and the core four got like stabbed and ripped up a lot. And they, like, I was surprised that Mason Gooding survived. Like, there's that whole scene where he gets like stabbed, like repeatedly,
literally like, 80 times. Yeah, how are you alive? Gale gets
I think Mark
brutally stabbed.
Mark said it. Mark said it on our show when we actually talked about that movie. He was like, I think those guys also love their characters a lot, and they didn't want to get rid of any of them. Like, they're like, we're not gonna kill anybody, and
that is, you know, that's the what you sign up for. So
yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah, but
we are happy
they're back. I'm happy that she's coming back. I mean, like, it's cool, and I hope, like we said with Neve Campbell, it seems like the way she talks about it seems like it's gonna be like a last hurrah kind of for her. Like, so hopefully it like at least closes the story off for them. I think if it's successful, we're always gonna get more Scream movies, but I just think that this will be the end for hopefully these characters. I mean, I'm surprised we're seven movies deep in this franchise. Like, if you would have told me that they were able to resurrect that in 2022 and it was going to be like, I know you don't love that movie, but like the fact that it like worked as well as it did for like a new generation of people, like I would have never thought that would have happened. And so, but it's crazy that we're seven movies in.
Yeah, great or not, you know, it's popular, so good for them. But I mean, at some point you gotta wrap things up. You can't be the longer you drag it on, the more corners you're gonna write yourself into. So
yeah,
hoping it goes out with a bang, not a whimper. I guess we'll find out probably next year.
I mean, at a certain point, let Sydney breathe and let her enjoy her life if she survives this one.
Let the girl rest.
Let the girl rest. Yeah.
But speaking of bangs, Godzilla times Kong.
We're going to talk about how wrong we were.
Oh, God, we have to. Box office time. God, were we off. That movie exploded in the cinemas over the weekend. Dude, with that. Was the final number? Do you have the final
million
number?
$80 million opening weekend. Yeah. One of my buddies that listens to the podcast was like dying when you were talking about the movie, because you were like, I don't want it to like bomb, but I also don't want it to like do well enough where we get another one.
Right. Yeah. So
it looks like it did well enough to keep that franchise going.
Yeah, it went $30 million over tracking.
I want Adam Wingard to be like free to this franchise, because like he is a really good director. Like, I love The Guest. Like, that's a really good movie. And he did Your Next as well, which is also really good. Like, and it seems like the interview I read that he did over the weekend, it seems like he is down to do more of these. And I was like, why are you down? But I guess they're paying him really well to do them. So,
hopefully.
And making a lot of money. Like I told you earlier, I really think this is the halo effect of Godzilla Minus One, because Godzilla is having a moment, and that's great.
Yeah.
Apparently, in America, we don't make these movies as well as they do, because as we've seen from the reviews of it. But I don't know. I mean, like I said too, like, I know we talked a lot of shit about like the movie and like we weren't excited to see it, but it doing well is very good for the theatrical experience.
Yeah,
as a whole, we want movies to do well, and it making $80 million this weekend was very surprising. And we were way off, because I said $55 million, and I only think I win because I got
congrats. This one goes to you. We had a pretty good gap in our guesses last week. You came in at 55, which was like the high end of where it was tracking. I went below tracking at $48 million is my prediction. Like I said, it went $30 million over its lowest tracking number. So yeah, that you definitely win. But we were both, prediction was almost doubled. So
I almost messaged you on Thursday because like the preview numbers came out, and the Thursday preview number was $10 million.
Yeah, I saw that.
And that was like 700,000 more than like Godzilla in 2014 did on preview night. And that movie opened to like $93 million when it came out. And I was like, oh, this is about to like over, I think we underestimated it really bad. And like, I mean, I guess people were excited for it.
I think I just was biased. Like, I just didn't want it to do great. So I was like, let's just maybe try to manifest that it wouldn't do.
You were definitely like, please don't do well enough to like warrant another sequel.
I honestly just didn't know there was that much love for this year, but they've all been increasingly higher reviewed, at least on Rotten Tomatoes. I haven't heard a good thing about this movie though, like critically, and it's sitting at a 47 Metascore, which is terrible, but people are entertained by it, and I guess that's really the big draw with this cinematic universe, which it clearly is.
Well, we were very wrong, guys, and we'll try to be positive more positive when we predict the box office moving forward. and other box office news, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire dropped 65.4% in its second weekend to $15.5 million. It has made $73.2 million domestically and just $108.3 million worldwide. I think I brought this up to you. This franchise has never been like an international franchise for some reason.
No.
It's weird to me that it isn't, because it feels like it would be, but it really has never been. Not even with the original Ghostbusters.
So 108 worldwide. I can't remember what we said the budget of that movie was. I'm just looking at it real quick. $100 million budget. Oh
yeah,
that's a miss.
So it still has some work to do. Dune Part 2 is still hanging on there in third place. $11.3 million this weekend. Only dropped 35.5%. It has made $252.6 million domestically and $627.3 million worldwide. It's not going to hit a billion, but it's made it enough to warrant another movie. So we are
certainly, which will probably be years in the making at the pace Denis Villeneuve will be making it. But oh well, I'm loving that it's still getting a lot of love.
Yeah, that too. And then the cast is probably really busy.
I'm
only bringing it up now because because Zendaya is in the movie, and we don't really cover TV a lot on the show anymore. But I read just a really interesting article about Euphoria and what they want to do with that third season. And it's, you can just tell, like, I feel like they're just grasping for straws to keep it going.
What are they even planning? Like,
so one of the ideas that Sam Levinson came up with was to make Rue, Zendaya's character, a private detective. It was supposed to ahead 5 years. It's supposed to jump ahead 5 years and she's going to be a private detective. And then the other idea was for her to be like a surrogate. And it just sounds bad. And I think the show works as well as it does in those first two seasons because of it being it's the youth experience. You want to see this kind of dark side of youth culture and high school. And right. I think it only works because of that. And then having it time jump and aging them, I don't think it will work the same way. And my thing is, we got two really great seasons out of it. And that cast is blown up too much. The Variety article is really funny because they said the actors are down to finish the show. They want to do another season. And then in parentheses they said, but none of their reps want them to. So the reps are like, nah, we don't need you guys. You guys are on to bigger and better things now.
Yeah, I can't see it happening.
I do respect the fact that they want to finish it. Because a lot of them weren't names. Only Zendaya was. Before they got that show. So I respect the fact that they want to finish it, but if you're just grasping for straws for an idea, I would rather that show end on two really great seasons, let the cast move on and do something else, do different.
I bet Sam Levinson is shaking in his boots because his last show,
Idol
was scrapped immediately. And dude, Euphoria is his baby. And if that doesn't go forward, I don't know if he has a lot of goodwill right now. So
I was telling my friend David, who's actually been on the show before, I was like, I feel like Sam Levinson, and I feel bad saying this, and it sounds mean, but I think he is a bit of a one-trick pony.
I think so, too.
He had a really good idea for this show, which is actually based on an Israeli show. But he actually took most of his life experience as a former drug addict and put a lot of that into Euphoria. And, hey, I mean, there's nothing wrong with having, one great idea. And it's cool that he came up with a really cool show and a show that actually for HBO became a really big kind of cultural movement too. Everyone was talking about it, good or bad. Some people hated that it was so dark and other people were we're happy that you guys are at least telling the truth about a certain pocket of youth culture. So
right.
So, and you know what? Zendaya won two Emmys for it. It blew up. I mean, everyone's, I think, gotten the benefits from being on that show for two seasons, and now it's just,
I think it's bore all the fruit that it's going to, and series is probably dead. But I mean,
I do love that their reps were like, well, we don't want the show to continue.
Yeah, that is funny.
We need to make more money, guys, and you're not going to make more money on that show, so but yeah. So we have, I guess the movie we are predicting this weekend, and I have to look up Tracky for it because I don't know much about The First Omen, but it's coming out this Friday. And I've heard good things from people who have seen it early, but for some reason, I'm not excited to see it. How do you feel about it?
Literally don't feel anything at all. I think the possession movie is just kind of a tired trope at this point. I mean, it's kind of, we've had so many of them. I don't know what it's going to do that some of the worst ones haven't already done. So I wasn't really. It's one of those ones where I can't remember if I've seen it or not. I think I did, but I just don't remember a lot of it. Yeah, well, for sure. But like, speaking of one-trick ponies, I kind of feel like that's what possession movies have become. Like, there's just nothing you can save for, you know, that When Evil Lurks movie from last year was a pretty original spin on a possession movie. You definitely got to check that out. But I'm not seeing anything in this movie that is like worth checking out. Yeah. I don't know.
And then remade it in 2006. And I kind of feel like the only reason they remade it in 2006, because they actually released it on 6/6/06. So I like built in like marketing for them on that day. The original movie is actually a good slow burn horror movie. The sequels are awful. I do like the original movie. It has one of the best like horror movie scores too, as far as like the music is amazing.
Okay. And this is a direct sequel, is it not?
Yeah, it looks like it. And what I just pulled up, tracking is between low end $8 million, high end $13 million.
Ooh. Whoa.
Either way, not great.
All on a how many million dollar budget? I'm not seeing here on IMDb.
I can't imagine this movie's that expensive.
No, probably not. But there's literally no info here.
Oh, $25 million.
Oh my God.
That seems like a lot, actually, for this movie.
Yeah, that's tough.
That seems like way too much for that. But yeah.
Well, it's 18A. That's a good sign.
Yeah, apparently it's a hard R too. People who saw it, so one of the guys who wrote about, he put it on his Twitter page, and he said there is some gory stuff in this that will make horror fans really happy. So there's that. Okay. I'm still not moved. Like, it's not moving the needle for me to really want to see it. Like, incredibly, and I love horror movies, but like, that's not, you know, I didn't love the first trailer, and I didn't love the second trailer either. Like, it didn't really like.
Oh, I didn't know that too. I saw one and it didn't sell me either, but 8 to 13, you say.
Yeah.
I'm feeling pretty middle on it, and I'm going to go with a nice even $10 million.
Oh, you
would. Is that what you were thinking? You
can take it. I was going to. No, yeah. I'll price is right. You. I'll go 11. I'll go slightly above you.
So I guess you feel like it's going to do better than lesser. So, okay. Not bad.
I didn't want to like tie you again. I did that with Ghostbusters. I was like,
okay. Well, next time you gotta give your guess first. I kind of jumped the gun there. Okay. Man. Well, I guess this time next week we will see who is closer. I'm excited to see how that one does. I still feel like clearly Godzilla versus Kong is, even if it drops significantly, it's going to dominate the box office again next weekend.
Yeah.
Looks like it anyway. Yep.
Looks like it is, because there's nothing else big coming out. So good for Godzilla. He's got an Oscar. He's a box office champ now. Good for him.
True that. He's having a moment.
He's having a real moment. Good for him. And meanwhile, Kong is like,
apparently he has the most screen time, so he's really winning.
That's what I actually heard about the movie, that he has like a significant amount of more screen time than Godzilla in it, which I wonder why they went in that direction.
Maybe cost less to render, perhaps.
Guys, I know it sounds like we should be seeing these movies, and I just had no desire to see it.
No,
and neither did Jackson. So
sorry,
but we promise. No, but we promise we will see other things that are good soon. Civil War, for sure,
100%. Cannot wait to chat that up here in a couple weeks.
Yeah. And I think that brings us to a close on episode. Actually, this is going to be 164 because our other news episode has not come out yet. So, yay. Sometimes we record a lot and we're like, is this episode 162? or sometimes we don't know for sure, but yeah.
161. Okay. I'm glad you had the number, because I honestly didn't know what to, I was going to type. I don't know what number this is. So glad you figured it out.
As always, we covered a lot today and we did it in an hour. So we are very proud of how streamlined these episodes are getting now. And we are so happy that you guys continue to listen to us and support us. I was supposed to bring this up at the top of the episode, but I can bring it up now that we're wrapping up. We had a really good week on Good Pods, courtesy of all you guys listening to us. We were at number 8 on their top 100 shows in any category, which is really nice. I think that's our highest position there. We are still stuck at number 3 on the film review charts. Like, we haven't moved at all. Like, we're number 3 every time I look on the film
top chart. Top 3 is great.
Yeah, top 3 is not bad. Yeah, not bad at all. And I have to also thank Dustin Rivka, who was on our deep dive episode for Batman Mask of the Phantasm. That episode is actually our highest charted episode in general on Good Pods. It hit number 6 top 100 episodes. And then also, not to be left out, because Jackson is a part of the crew as well, our Dawn of the Dead episode hit number 12 in the same week. And then we had a news episode that was also ranked on the top 100 episodes. So thank you guys for supporting us everywhere. But Good Pods is, they do a lot to support independent podcasts. So we are really glad that you guys are listening to us on that platform as well. And that platform is getting bigger and bigger now. I think Google Podcasts is actually done soon. I think this week they're going to be done. And Good Pods has been trying to get everyone from who's been on Google Podcasts to join their platform. So hopefully they do. And more exposure for us as well. And we are also officially on the YouTube now, officially on the YouTube now. And it's actually done wonders for the show. People are listening to older episodes on YouTube.
Nice.
And honestly, we are, I think we're both excited to really expand on that part of the show in general, because I think, I love that Back to the Blockbuster is a brand. And we love the logo and it's great, but we want to sell the show, with us too. Like, we want you guys to really get to know us more. And I think that the YouTube transition will help a lot with that.
That's the spot for sure. We're actually filming some reels right after this to throw on there for some content for you guys to check out.
So we are really looking forward to that. And just so you guys know, our episodes won't actually debut on YouTube right away as soon as the audio episodes come out, because it takes a little bit to upload them and make sure they look decent on YouTube. So they are basically, what they're going to do is, I think they're going to do 4 or 5 at a time and just release them bi-weekly on YouTube. So if you don't get a chance to listen to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Good Pods, you can eventually just watch us on YouTube and adore our handsome faces. So there's also that. So that's fun. And I'm actually really looking forward to really doing that. I'm really excited for the next phase of what the show is going to be. And I think that's a big part of it. So
100%
really, really happy to do that with you, my friend. And can't wait to see kind of what happens with all of that. And
speaking for both of us here.
Yeah. So thank you guys for the continued support. Thank you for listening to us, whoever you listen to us at, whether it's Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Good Pods, but you should listen to us on the Playlist Studio app, because they are a podcast network and they are lovely and they take care of us. And they do a lot of legwork that we don't have the time to do. So we are very appreciative of everything that they do. So please download their app from the Google Play Store or the iOS Store if you have an iPhone. And as always, I am Gaius. This is Jackson. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Back to the Blockbuster. And we'll see you next week.
Take care, guys. Thanks for tuning in. See you later.